kind of a shout. Big back like Nicki Minaj. Anytime she turn around, she got me over. I see the back under the doubt. The headlight, the steady flash. Come and give me that kitty cat. You turn me into a love. I say wait, you must become my lady. Oh yeah, you drive me crazy. Yeah, I got to spend this feeling.
My sweat, oh baby, the color of the dance of my lover. The way you shaking and your spirit, girl, you give me fire. Girl, your body gets fire. Girl, you give me the fire. Girl, your body gets fire.
That song always gets me lit. It is a song by DJ Maforisa featuring one of my favorite Afro-pop artists, Wizkid, and it is called Soweto. I have some business-minded folks in the studio with me today, and we're going to be talking about the challenges of doing business in Nigeria. On the hot topic for today, I'm asking the question, is a woman selfish if she chooses not to invest her inheritance in her husband's business? Joining me is Billy Keys Adebi Abiola, who is the founder of We Cyclists. Thank you for joining me.
Hi.
I have Kembi Beho. You have like three titles, CEO of Futuresoft and creative director of Always Me. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And of course, our Agric entrepreneur, I have Esse Aibogun, who is the creative director of Green Sprout, which is a coconut bottling company. Thank you guys for joining me. So let's go straight into it. I want to kind of talk about the challenges of doing business, not just the challenges, the way we navigate around doing business in Nigeria and how we navigate those challenges. So let me just start with asking, what exactly is the process of bottling, you know, your coconut water?
Okay, so...
And how did you sort of start the business? You know, what was the inspiration behind it? And, you know, just give us like a brief rundown of your business.
All right, so like you said, you know, co-manage Green Sprout coconut water. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much what it is. We don't add anything to our coconut water. It's 100% pure. Mm-hmm. We add no preservatives, no additives. We don't even add water. So you're getting what you get when you open that tender green coconut. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty straightforward for that reason. Mm-hmm. But because we don't add anything, we have to make sure that it's preserved the right way. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about challenges of doing business in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. We have to keep it cold. Mm-hmm. So let's say we were in another country where electricity is not an issue. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't even be a problem. It would be just so straightforward. But this is Nigeria. This is Lagos. We have a problem with electricity. Mm-hmm. So when we bottle, you know, we filter and bottle our coconut water, we have to make sure we refrigerate it. Mm-hmm. And keep it cold until it gets to the final consumer.
So what was the inspiration behind you starting Always Me? So you have, you're kind of a dual entrepreneur, right? Yeah. Serious IT CEO. And then you have a lifestyle sort of baby brand, you know, company that you're running. I guess I'll leave you to tell me about it. Tell us about
it. Okay, so Always Me kind of evolved, right? Mm-hmm. So my sister was pregnant. I was looking for a very special gift, and I couldn't find anything. I didn't want to go to Mother Care and just buy some kind of bath set or something. You know, I wanted it to be special. And, you know, I kept racking my brain, like, what can I either make? You know, because I'm a very creative person as well, and everyone that knows me knows I like making gifts.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like on my mind for a long time. Thank God, man. You know, that pregnancy is 9 months.
We had
some time. Yeah. And then one day I had a dream. And in this dream, I made an Ankara playmat out of my old Ankara, my mom's old Ankara, and my sister's old Ankara. And I woke up and I was so excited, you know, and I woke my husband up and I'm like, babe, I have this idea. And he's like, babe, 7 a.m. It's Saturday morning.
For Ankara mats.
I was like, really? And then I called my mom and she was like, is everything okay? I'm like, yes, why? She's like, 7 in the morning, Saturday. You don't usually wake up this early. I'm like, yes, I just need your Ankara. Mm-hmm. I went to her, got all the Ankara from there straight to the market. Mm-hmm. I sat there from about 11 in the morning till 7 in the evening making this mat.
So you actually took the dream as reality?
Yes.
Okay.
It was because it looked so beautiful in the dream. And I'm like, I need, and you usually need I don't remember my dreams. Mm-hmm. So this was, you know, for me, it felt like, okay, this is a message. You need to do this. Mm-hmm. And I did. And, you know, it came out so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And when I presented it at the baby shower, immediately I actually got orders.
Orders. You know. Okay.
Yeah. So it was kind of like, okay.
You landed into it. You landed into the side hustle.
Yeah. And, you know, my sister was obviously very excited about it. And she's like, okay, you know what? Since people are like, let's do this properly. And the brand, you know, since then has actually evolved. Now we have 26 products.
Okay. And you only started with one?
We started with one, you know.
And how many years have you been in business?
Two and a half years. Oh, wow. Well, almost 2.5 years.
What was the inspiration behind being conscious about, you know, recycling in Nigeria? Like, did you see it as a business, or was it, are you just a goody two shoes?
No. I think for me it was just like, you know, I lived in the US for about 13 years, mm-hmm. and, you know, come and visit Nigeria, go back and just see that there's a lot, you know, like there's a difference. Like there it's very clean, mm-hmm. and you have trash cans everywhere, mm-hmm. but here you have a lot of trash. And, you know, struggle to kind of reconcile that, like, mm-hmm. you know, Nigeria is an amazing place. Mm-hmm. Why is it that we're just struggling with trash?
Sure, yeah.
You know, and then took a class while I was in school, mm-hmm. and kind of discovered that there's so many people that live in, you know, places like Nigeria that mm-hmm. just like struggle because of trash. Mm-hmm. Their communities are dirty, they are flawed, they have malaria. Mm-hmm. And all these things are because they just don't dispose of their trash properly. Mm-hmm. So it was a combination of the goody two shoes, mm-hmm. plus the fact that there is actually a business opportunity. Mm-hmm. There are so many big companies here mm-hmm. in Nigeria that buy trash. They actually use trash mm-hmm. and make products. So mm-hmm. people buy broken buckets mm-hmm. and make chairs, mm-hmm. you know, here in Nigeria. So mm-hmm. it's just like, how can you connect this, you know, huge amount of raw waste. Material mm-hmm. with someone that's willing to buy it and use it? Mm-hmm. So that was really how recycling.
So how did you start the, what's the funding that goes into that? So, and then you pitching social responsibility, because in Nigeria, it's something that I think we all agree that we don't do enough of. So how did you sort of pitch this idea, and how did you get it, you know,
off the ground? I think I was really lucky because I went to MIT, and mm-hmm. MIT is one of the, it's one of the, like, mm-hmm. you know, most entrepreneurial schools you can ever go to. Mm-hmm. Like every single day, there's some competition or the mm-hmm. other. So it was pretty easy, not easy, mm-hmm. but it was like very convenient.
You had the template, yeah.
To just apply for this, apply mm-hmm. for that. And we got a lot of, you know, funding for mm-hmm. that. And
there was, whilst you were in school. Okay.
And then also took classes, mm-hmm. took the right classes, mm-hmm. you know, met the right advisors and mentors mm-hmm. that helped us to kind of develop the idea. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was really hard to...
So you took it seriously from there, as though this was something you were actually going to execute.
Yes. Okay. So it was the second year of business school, and it was mm-hmm. deciding either to apply for work, or should I go and do this crazy idea? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've worked for 5 years already. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. I can't do it again. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to Nigeria. And I was like, you know what? Like, mm-hmm. if it doesn't work out, I'll look for a job. Mm-hmmm. Like, worst case scenario.
You can always fall back on a job.
Yeah. So let me just do this thing. So mm-hmm. did it. And, you know, we came to Nigeria and did some interviews. And mm-hmm. people were like, ah, yes. You know, whenever I look at the trash, I feel so bad. Mm-hmm. You know, people were like, saying real mm-hmm. emotional things about how waste affects them. Mm-hmm. And it was that kind of gave us the motivation to continue. Mm-hmm. We also pitched it in a way that, and said, look, your brand could actually gain from helping clean up communities. Because mm-hmm. people were looking for CSR. Mm-hmm. So we kind of keyed into that CSR
initiative. Yeah.
And a lot of people kind of helped and supported us. And it mm-hmm. doesn't have to be only money. Mm-hmm. It can be, this bus that you don't need again, give it to us, we'll use it.
Yeah.
You know, so just being creative about that.
And then you find the people that need these waste materials, or you sort of recycle them in-house yourself.
We found people that need it. So they said, look, I want this. Give me, let mm-hmm. it be like this. Supply it like this. Mm-hmm. And we supply them.
And is it completely non-profit? Like there's no, do you want to make money out of this?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So I guess, the more volume that you recycle, which is where the money then starts to
absolutely.
Come.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be watching
billion Naira business.
Really?
Billion.
So are you enjoying the benefit of a monopoly now, or are there other people that are sort of coming for your spot?
Shaking the pot.
Yeah.
But it's definitely all about, like, look, what mm-hmm. value can you bring as your own company? Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about, people are going to have your idea. They're going to copy mm-hmm. your idea, but mm-hmm. how can you execute, and how mm-hmm. can you make sure that you do it in a good way?
I don't think that we think enough socially as people. We're all very selfish. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like, I commend you. I really, really do commend you, because it's not the most refined or dignified thing to do. Do you understand? You have to go to like waste, you know, I mean, I can imagine the smells and the, you know, communities.
I'm going
to
have
to, you know what I mean? No, I'm not going to lie to you now. You know what I mean? Like to come out of self and actually do that yourself is commendable. But let me throw it over to you, because your recycling kind of affects Madeira over here. You're bottling coconut water. Obviously you're buying plastic bottles. We don't manufacture hardly anything in Nigeria. So, can you speak to recycling and how conscious are you being about, you know, recycling?
We started business June, mm-hmm. about June of 2016. Mm-hmm. And from the period of June mm-hmm. to December, the cost of my bottles mm-hmm. went up twice.
Wow.
Right? Now, it's something, if you're not
this
thinking...
Was it, do you think this was related to, obviously, the
dollar? To the
economy,
dollar, yeah, the economy, mm-hmm. the dollar, mm-hmm. naira falling mm-hmm. and all that. And like you said, we're importing everything. Mm-hmm. Even if we're not importing that particular plastic, mm-hmm. we're importing the materials yeah. that are used to mold mm-hmm. those. So all these costs, they affect. All mm-hmm. affect things down the line. Mm-hmm. So the prices of my bottles went up twice. Bottles different from caps. Caps also went up twice. Mm-hmm. If you're not thinking of being a sustainable business mm-hmm. that's long-term, mm-hmm. you would think, I'll just increase
the price of
my product. But that's not how things work. You're trying to grow a brand. You mm-hmm. cannot be yo-yoing on your price.
Yeah.
So it's a brunt that you bear. Mm-hmm. You bear that, mm-hmm. you know, in that you bear that and mm-hmm. just move on. We don't really know how things are going to get. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why now I don't know how much plastics cost is because the last time we bought was in bulk. Mm-hmm. So we are still benefiting from
your
past price.
Yeah.
I do not know now how much it would be. Mm-hmm. So we've tinkered with the idea of, you know, maybe in our retail partners, maybe having a little, you know, buckets mm-hmm. where if you drink it there, you just, you know,
recycle
put it,
the bottle,
recycle
yeah.
there, and then to have some sort of some process where they get an incentive mm-hmm. system there. So mm-hmm. maybe you get a discount off of your next purchase. Mm-hmm. We've thought about it, mm-hmm. and I'm the one who is coming in with the Americana, mm-hmm. which I don't even understand why that is an Americana mindset. Yes. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, this is Nigeria. People mm-hmm. might not really want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that where Felicius comes in, I think mm-hmm. that is really key because mm-hmm. it's changing the whole mindset
of how we deal with waste.
Yeah, of how we deal with waste. Like, why throw it away when you can mm-hmm. reuse it?
Yeah. So, Kendi, I want to touch on your CEO side, your IT side. I know that you, the crux of the business was building websites for companies.
Yes.
And you kind of talked about how websites sort of became obsolete and, you know, the recession kind of slowed down business in that area. Mm-hmm. Where did the brainwave come to sort of create a blue ocean for your business, for the, you know, IT business, when the websites aren't really bringing in as much money? What did you sort of do to revive that?
Okay,
how else did the recession affect you guys, and what else?
I mean, last year I would say was, you know, the hardest year mm-hmm. of, you know, doing business for several reasons. Obviously, the dollar, you know, madness mm-hmm. really affected us because we still do have a lot of dollar-related costs mm-hmm. in terms of our hosting is in the U.S. because, again, electricity. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to actually host in Nigeria. Even now, they've got some server companies here, but still the price difference is mm-hmm. so small, you know, but the headache that you'll have is so big. So you're just like, okay, whatever, let's just keep that. So about 5 years ago, we actually started doing social media management for some of our clients.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this, you know, minute baby, mm-hmm. You know, practice that we had in our company that wasn't really, you know, a big money maker, mm-hmm. but it's something that, you know, I saw as this is the future. So we need to somehow make sure that we're part of the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, technology evolves so fast mm-hmm. and it's sometimes hard to actually be able to say, that's it. This mm-hmm. is what you have to focus mm-hmm. on, you know, because there's so many different things. Some things work, some things don't work, you know. And now, you know, during the recession, you know, we realized that, okay, people were holding on to their money like this, mm-hmm. you know, but what they did want was exposure, you know. Mm-hmm. So instead of getting a website, you know, they were like, okay, this money that we have for the website, can we spread it over the next 1 year?
Yeah.
And can you just do social media management mm-hmm. for us? You know, so you're still earning the same money. It's a little bit more work,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, you're actually helping brands, you know, put their names out there,
mm-hmm.
build followers and helping them build their business and also creating a new channel for them to
mm-hmm.
actually convert, you know, followers into potential
customers.
So the whole of last year, you know, we got only 4 web development jobs, which is... it's ridiculous. Like,
mm-hmm.
between... So this Q1 that just finished,
mm-hmm.
we've done 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
that just as a,
yeah.
You know, like a reference
comparative,
point,
yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
I mean, when I say Q1, January is kind of dead.
Even February to join it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that just shows you that, okay, you know what? last year people were really holding their money like this and were afraid. But I think this year people are like, okay, you know what? We don't know how long this recession is going to last. So let's not be paralyzed by fear. Let's still move on. We still do need a website, you know, because depending on whether you're doing B2B business or B2C business, a website is still important and relevant, especially in the B2B segment. For social media works fantastic if you have a product and if you're doing B2C. It doesn't work that well if you're doing B2B. So B2B, your social media will be for top of the mind awareness, stay in people's faces, you know, for engaging people with, you know, maybe some questions, giveaways and things like that. Just getting your brand out there. But for B2C, it's actual sales.
Well, back to you, Bilkis. So speaking of costs, we're talking about all these random costs that either help or hurt your business. Now, you sit on a Lagos State
Employment Trust Fund.
So now people are looking for money. So how would you sort of advise businesses that are sort of like first stage, you know, second, what stage would you say it always me is? Like,
we're still second.
You're still small? You're not small, medium yet? Still small?
I think we're still, I mean, I guess it depends on how you define small, right?
So let's just say small, medium,
right? Yeah, SMEs.
So how would you sort of encourage SMEs to sort of grow? A lot of people feel like there's no money in Nigeria. Nobody's giving any money. Family is not even borrowing you money. You know what I mean? So you sit on that board. For the people who are skeptical about finding a loan, especially in Nigeria, what can you advise people to sort of look out for?
I think one of the things I've seen is that there's a lot of businesses, a lot of people have great ideas. But like you said, a lot of people are just kind of stuck in this cycle where the running costs are just like eating into their profits. And so the Lagos State Employment Trust Fund is a 6.25 billion naira fund per annum. So the government is supposed to contribute 25 billion over 4 years and is to give loans of for SMEs.
Is that for Lagos State or is that for Nigeria?
For Lagos State.
Just for Lagos State.
So you must be a Lagos State resident. You must have, you know, tax registration. And, you know, of course, the business must be in Lagos. And, you know, for micro businesses, like really small businesses, they can get up to 500,000 naira. And for SMEs, you can get up to 5 million naira. And then there's also employability programs and training. And it's really a great thing because people that have businesses that have been running for some time, so they say you must be in operation for at least a year. And they kind of want to maybe buy that machine or, you know, buy that new generator or something that would help them to really pick up
their business. Yeah,
exactly. You know, they can, you know, borrow money. And, you know, you look at commercial banks, most of the time they borrow at, you know, crazy 30% and then they ask for collateral and all these things.
So but what the, are the key requirements? Problem,
there's no, you don't need any collateral. Just need two guarantors. So two people that have like a tax card and Lastra. Then you also need to have, it's, and it's 5% per annum. And it's also not only about money. So we what we do is we also give training. So we've seen a lot of people have businesses. They don't know, okay, simple HR, simple accounting that will help you to save money. We do that. We also have someone that we pair with you that's kind of like a coach that helps you to get your business to the, take your business to the next level.
Okay. And also, so you have additional sort of value-added services that
and
come
then,
with it.
And then also, there's also the leverage part where it's like, okay, you're working in Lagos State. People say, oh, they have so many challenges with Lagos. Maybe they have this permit that they have issues with, that permit. Being under the LSATF umbrella, it helps you to say, okay, look, I have this issue with government. We'll take it up for you and make sure that, because at the end of the day, we want Lagos to be somewhere that is friendly to businesses, where businesses can feel like, look,
they can thrive.
They can thrive.
Okay, so speaking of all these helpers, let me now come back to you. When it comes to staffing in Nigeria, how have you sort of dealt with finding the right people? Have you been through staff? Like, is your, what's your staff turnover, in, even in like your year of business?
So, well, I guess we've been lucky not to have any turnovers yet. And they're relatively still new.
Touch Westwood. Touch something.
You know, I don't know. To be honest, when it comes with staff, you are just throwing spaghetti on the wall and seeing what sticks. You really have no idea what it's going to
it's like
be.
It's trial and error.
It's trial and error. Like, you know, you interview people. They, you know, you ask, even if you ask the right questions, there's some people who are just programmed to kill interviews. They just blow you away. And then there are people who are not that great at interviews, but then they are that is the right person. So you never really know. So we hired staff. So far, so good. You know, there are things that we're like, you know, this has to change. But I also understand that I have to, we have to show them, we have to show them how we want them to be. You know, like, you cannot just hire staff and think that that is it and leave them to their own devices. You sometimes you have to micromanage.
But doesn't that kill where you need your, you need to run business development and go and sell your stuff? There's already like a distribution, you know, issue that we're dealing with. You're trying to, you know, go and find out who's going to buy your coconut water. There are things that you have to put in place. A NAFTAT certificate, how long does that take? You know what I mean? Like, you kind of just want people who are breaking coconuts to just be able to break those damn coconuts and leave you to be great. Do you understand? It's simple.
It's true.
You know what I mean? So how are you comfortably able to leave such a simple task? And not kind of worried that there's going to be mosquito in that coconut.
I know.
You know what I mean?
But it's, that's why I said sometimes you have to micromanage. And I think that if you put in that effort in the initial stages of really looking over them and saying, no, that is not it, this is it, and just being attentive to everything they do, eventually you can let go.
Right? So you are maintaining like a prolonged training approach.
And
like
it's necessary. It's necessary, especially when the things seem rudimentary, and you're like, oh, of course they should know. No, you cannot assume that they know.
Especially with food.
Exactly. Yeah. Like hygiene is key. So it's very important that I am watching everything that you do. These are things I used to do, these things before I hired them, and I made it very clear. Don't think that I'm hiring you to do something. No, I used to do this. The only reason you are here is because I have to do other things. So they know that this is something I used to
do.
I can do it. So when I can't do it, I don't need you. But I need you here because I'm trying to grow this business. So I like we always have to watch them, be very vocal. Don't say, oh, let me not say no. Better say it. Better just be very clear as to what they are doing wrong. And one thing that they do sometimes that I don't like is when they call me all the time for any this is now not, you know, the bottling. This is just admin stuff. They are flashing me. Just flashing me anyhow.
I
had to call. I said, listen, do not flash me. You know,
or something so silly.
If it is important, send me a text message and I know what to do. Don't be flashing me anyhow.
First of all, document all your processes. It's very important. You cannot assume that this new person knows how you want it just because the previous person knows, and the previous person might not even have time to teach them, or you know, or even if both of them are still in the organization, you know, like knowledge. I've realized there's some people who suck up knowledge like a sponge, and they want to learn, and they're continuously like, like you said, they don't sit around. They actually say, "Oh, how do I fix that? How do what's this thing? How do I do this?" You know, and they're constantly asking questions. And then there are other people who are just like this.
So you have to study their personality.
It's really a personality thing, you know. So the ones that, you know, kind of just sit back and wait for you, you need to be flogging them every day. The other people, you need to be dangling the carrot like, woo, this is what we can do for you, you know, like if you perform better, you know. And I think that's kind of how you get bring out the best out of people. But it's really, I don't think there's like a blanket approach. I think it's really, again, dependent on each business, you know, the skill level. But really what we've seen, so for example, with Always Me, we've put a lot of technology in place. So we have a project management software that manages our production. Because, as I said, side hustle, we're not always there, you know, so we need to use technology to be able to monitor everything. And the best tool for that is WhatsApp, because everybody has WhatsApp. The tailors have WhatsApp, the production staff have WhatsApp, the admin staff have WhatsApp, we have WhatsApp. So we have lots of different WhatsApp groups within the business where, you know, information is exchanged. If they go fabric shopping, that's how I approve the fabrics. I'm like, okay, this,
and this.
You know, so you just have to be smart about it. And I think, you know, I learned this pretty early from Futuresoft, actually. At the beginning, I had a lot of project-based, like, freelance developers. So I didn't really need that much structure because it was, this is the project, this is what we're going to do, this is how long it's going to take. Okay, go and do the work, send me an update every day. That works quite easy. But then when you now get somebody into the business that, you know, is supposed to do what you're doing so that you can go out and chase
big
money,
yeah.
you know, you very quickly realize that the things that, you know, you take for granted or
that seem commonsensical
are not really. And then you also realize that there's so much information in your head that you haven't documented. Yeah. And I think that, you know, when you're a small business and you're doing stuff by yourself, it happens very easily. Yeah. So my advice is document, and create templates as well, because then you don't need to micromanage. This is the email. This is how we send it out. Mm-hmm. Every new person that comes and asks a question, this is how you send it out. This is how we do a quotation.
This is HR. This is exactly your employment contract.
Then the micromanaging becomes less because
there's a structure.
All you need to do is fill this thing. So maybe you check it a couple of times. Okay, did they do it right? They didn't do it right. And then, you know, you keep correcting. You know, like she said, don't keep quiet.
Well, thank you for those pointers. Thank you for the sound wisdom. Thank you guys for staying with us. We'll be right back and we'll be discussing the hot topic of the day.
Hey guys, here is a story. My father was a hard worker and a well-accomplished man. I absolutely loved my father, and my heart is only just healing from his unexpected passing last year. I married a man similar to my dad, and my dad was very pleased with him. He is my world. Now, being a responsible father, he left me with £100,000 cash, a property in Lagos, and one in London. The paperwork has just been processed, and I should be getting all access to my funds any day now. My husband works with his father, but has recently been trying to break out on his own. He needs collateral for a loan to seal a deal he expects to gain 200% profit from. He passed the comment the other day that startled me. He said, "When we get the money from your inheritance, I can apply for that loan." And I thought, "We?" As much as I trust my husband, my father worked very hard for his money, and I find it risky to invest it in a deal that may go wrong and one that I have no idea what layers or intricacies there may be. Why does he assume this? My name is not on any of the business deals. I have plans for retirement, and I've been thinking about what to do with my assets. Should I be thinking as we, or is it okay to selfishly do as I please with my money? I asked my mother, and she thinks I should stay out of it. She said my dad never bothered her for anything hugely financial, so she can only advise me to pray and not give away what I will regret. I'm not against lending money when there is need, especially when it comes to contributing to my household, but this is my inheritance. Is this something I will regret down the line, especially if the business venture eventually becomes a success? Is it okay to say no in a marriage? Will it affect our relationship? The house we live in is property he also inherited from his parents. How does one say no to a spouse without looking selfish?
Welcome back, guys. Well, you've heard the story. Billy Keats! What do you have to say? Do you feel some type of way about that kind of relationship? What would you say to this lady? Let me ask the question. Is it selfish to say no in marriage?
Because, I mean, one of the things that I've learned in marriage is that you can't take people's advice. Because no marriage is the same. Because your friend can come and tell you something. Ah, that guy is a criminal. Is this, is that. And you will now follow the advice and then you will now regret it. So I would say, personally, if it was me, I would ask, what has he done for her? Because, you know, usually marriage is give and take. So maybe her husband has been helping her, supporting her. And maybe he just needs that little extra push for his business. But she needs to think about it. And also think about, okay, what kind of business is it? Is it something that is going to work? Is it something that... Because, you know, family and friends, you know. So if all those boxes are ticked and it's a good business, I would say, don't give everything over. There's a minimum level of money that a woman should have. It's like your...
To yourself.
Like, nobody needs to know. Because that's your money of when there's nothing. That's what puts food on the table for everybody to eat. You know? But if he needs help and needs support and you have that extra money and it's, like, well-structured, where it's not like, oh, I'll borrow. Because you know when they say, pillow, I'll borrow you money. The money is, you're not going to get the money again. But it's well-structured and you're like, hey, I have a lawyer, like, You do want to bring lawyers into it.
Because I don't think you should go into a deal in the dark. Because that's what causes bitterness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Like, I'm conflicted a little bit. But for the most part, we are finding money somewhere else. So, you know, you are a good person. You know what I mean? This is the work that you even do.
When the money is in me, I will collect.
You understand? So I get it. So how do you not shoot yourself in the foot? Let me pass it over to you. Do you feel like... I came to her and was like, oh, when the money comes. So there's obviously an expectation that, you know, the money is a we thing. So do you see it as my money is my money and your money is our money? Or sometimes you feel like you know, maybe we should give a little bit more.
You give. My money is my money, though. But
like, let's get that straight.
Yeah, it's it's true.
Yeah.
But then, you know, sometimes you give, and then it depends on the situation at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I didn't like about the situation was the fact that he assumed that I would be okay with
it. But isn't that a normal assumption in a partnership? Because it is we.
No, because it's an inheritance, which means that I did not have that money. Mm-hmm. Somebody died.
Mm-hmm.
And then trusted it to me,
mm-hmm.
right? So what if my father were alive?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of sentiments that come into this. This is not money that you, maybe I had my job and I got a huge bonus.
And,
there are sentiments attached to it, right? And there might be conversations that I had with my father of what he would have loved for me to do with it.
Yeah.
So you cannot just come out and just assume that I'll be willing to. Mm-hmm. What if I'm not even ready to touch
the
yet?
Money, yeah? Mm-hmm.
You know, there are just things that, now when I start, because I have a very wild imagination. I can start to think many things like, how can I do?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like, why, and why would you just come and assume? And it's just so insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing for you to ask, which I know some men are not comfortable doing.
Mm-hmm.
But if this is your business, right, and you really need this investment, then you ask. Like, you treat it like you are asking for an investment.
Yeah.
You cannot just assume, because when you assume, I don't think you would take that investment that seriously.
Yes.
And then the other thing is, you have to know your partner, right? And know the track record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we've had a track record of...
That's what you were saying.
Yeah.
Of, you know, money.
Mm-hmm. Not adding up.
Money business. You gotta apply wisdom.
Because
when push comes to shove, if there's a ditch somewhere, you will have to cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
So in this situation, I think the money might even be better as a buffer, if that was the situation where the, you know, funny money behavior, right? So it might even be better for you not to even touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what if this business doesn't pan out
right? to be, that's like backup money. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then number three, I need to know that you have done absolutely everything that you needed to do to get financing, and I'm your last resort.
So you think that a wife shouldn't be the first port of call if you feel, I mean, that's your life partner, so that's somebody you obviously trust. So do you think that we as women are selfish in the way we sort of push men to go and sort it out?
This is how I see.
Shouldn't
it
be you?
I would take it in a business perspective. If it is a one man, you know, sole proprietorship, maybe I'm your first port of call, point of call.
Yeah.
But if it is a corporation, I shouldn't be your first point of call. Right?
Right.
So if this is a corporation we're talking about, then please.
Yeah. So how would you sort of address that? We, you know, support him before he blows. So that when he blows, it's not Shalewa that is reaping the profits. Right. You know what I mean? What would you say to that?
So, I mean, personally, I'm a businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it would be a business decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I would first say, okay, you know what? Can I see what exactly you want to do with this money?
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
I will tell you, sorry, but I don't think that you should go and borrow this money from anybody.
Not even me.
You know, and I would make it very clear that this is an investment,
mm-hmm.
not a borrow or and I would actually say...
So you would outline your terms very clearly.
Outline my terms. So, you know, either there's some kind of equity attached to whatever
mm-hmm.
I'm giving.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, this is what my father worked hard for.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to use it responsibly,
mm-hmm.
you know. If not, it might just come from heaven and come my head, you know. So for me, it would be something that I would also tell him that you can't have everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be smart about this. If we're talking about
said no in marriage?
A lot of the time it's, you know, a fight, but it's the same thing when you get said no
to,
you know, you're also not happy with the
no,
right?
Yeah.
But I think one thing that in marriage you have to remember, we're on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say no,
mm-hmm.
it's not because I'm being spiteful. It's not because, you know, I don't want you to succeed,
mm-hmm.
but it's because I don't think that in this situation,
mm-hmm.
what you're
mm-hmm.
asking is reasonable or makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So either you bring stronger arguments forward
mm-hmm.
and convince me so that
mm-hmm.
I can change the no to a yes,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
or you just say, okay, you know what? You maybe try and even understand my points. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously with finances, it's sometimes hard.
It mm-hmm. seems very black and white. Because once you said no, there's no understanding. You know what I mean?
Well,
it's almost like a proposal. If somebody says no, you assume that's the end of the
relationship.
You know, and I truly feel that with the finance thing, I truly feel like it almost feels like a huge crack. it's like a huge disappointment, especially if the person feels like
entitled.
A bank manager is not going to ask me all these questions. You're my wife, you know, so they're not expecting the grilling.
Well, but I think it also depends on, you know, like what kind of relationship you have. As Bilke said, every marriage is different, you know, so the you know, dynamics might be completely different, you know. And I think if you knew me when you married me, so you know that, first of all, I always ask plenty questions. And you want to buy cornflakes for what?
He won't even come to you because you don't want to answer all the questions that you're asking.
So if you do come to me, be ready to answer all those questions because you know I will have many questions because you know that I understand business as well, you know, and because you know that I will, I don't want you to go and fail. That's, you know, what... the for me would be important because if I feel like, you know what, this investment is a bit wonky, there's no way that you're getting my inheritance, my bonus, my anything, you know. But if I feel that, you know what, this is actually a really good business opportunity, I would say, okay, you know what, let's do it like this. Get this amount of money because this can do this, this, this till then. Then after that, let's go find
funding. So you give him some?
Yeah, okay. I would. But obviously, as I said, those all those boxes need to check first and you need to be able to answer all my questions. And, you know, not get angry as well that I'm asking those questions because at the end of the day, you know, this is my money and it's money that I didn't have before, but it's also, as I said, it's sentimental. You know, so it's not just... any kind of one government deal and you know, that one, that's different because you feel with that kind of like if that was you feel like I can do it again even if he blows the money I will do it again. I can get that money again.
So how would you address financial transparency? A lot of people don't talk about finances before they get married. Sometimes it's actually uncomfortable. There are some guys that their body language, even their demeanor, doesn't you're not gonna ask. You know what I mean? They don't give off that you can ask. And I asked them, an uncle of mine once, and I asked him, I said, does your wife know what's in your bank account? He goes, why? You know what I mean? And I said, what do you mean why? He said, if she's not contributing to at least 50% of the bills in this house, she don't need to know my bank account. How do you feel about that?
You have your own money. I have my own money. I went to school. I have this education. So I can work make my own money. Of course, we have joint things. And he takes care of all expenses and everything. But in terms of knowing, okay, this is how much enters your account on a daily basis, I don't know.
And you don't feel it's important to know? Is it important or is it not? Is it a conversation that is awkward to have?
If I sit in there and say, okay, how much do you have? Show me all your bank. Of course,
it's probably... Not show me, but there might be I need to transfer. Like, you know, there might be a time where you need to know. I want to ask.
I
want to ask if he will share. So at the beginning of the relationship, it's a question that I would ask. Not really because I want to spend it. I'm not overly materialistic. I like nice things, you know what I mean? But I just feel like if we are together... Same way you knew about my inheritance,
you
knew it was coming.
That's the thing. Is like maybe the girl shouldn't have shared it.
Yeah,
you know, if you feel like something that's a big cause issues, you know.
Okay, but so you don't believe in full disclosure.
I mean, I think it's to the extent that the person feels comfortable. You know, some people are very transparent. Like they'll say, okay, this is how much I have in this bank. Oh, these are all my bank papers, everything. And some people are saying, look, no, this is how I was raised. This is how I'm used to doing things. I don't want to share.
So you respect if your husband doesn't feel comfortable with you knowing that information. I think from my uncle's perspective, he just felt, he said, when I'm broke, she trusts me. Do you understand? She don't want to know what's in that bank account on a bad day. So I think positively, you know what I mean? He said, on a bad day, trust me, you don't want to know.
What's stopping you that?
Yes.
How are we going to do it?
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of men that struggle and they're working hard. And women, we're very, very like... anxious and ask questions. How are we going to eat? How are we going to pay school fees? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? And at the end of the day, you will find that it will start causing problems. You know, so just, okay, let him do what he has been doing.
Yeah.
Leave him alone. Do your own thing. So if you need to step in, you can step in. But, you know, I only know what they show me. If you want to tell me, it's okay. I'll see it. But if you don't tell me, it's fine with me.
Are you traditional in the sense that you feel a man should spend more?
I think you don't need to know everything. But if you are in debt, I need to know.
See, that's what I'm saying. Because America, they do credit checks and you inherit your partner's, you know, debt. If they haven't paid it, even in debt. So I feel like if you have any funny, you know what I mean?
Or if you put the house you know, as collateral
on something.
Please, let me know.
And then you're not asking me for my
father's comment. Let them come and somebody else on a dumb day. Or, you know, or God forbid something happens to you and yeah. then I realize that you it's are in millions of debt and then people are looking at me like, how far?
I think every marriage goes through a stage. So at the beginning, you know, it's like, oh, okay, everybody's kind of figuring everybody out. Okay, what investment did you have? What this, what that? So I think at the stage when you now start working together better, it now kind of evolves and you become more like collaborative. And I'm beginning to see that as well. Like, I'm knowing more, but it's not because I'm asking. It's because we are, you know, becoming more, because we have to work together. So, and I've seen that with my parents too. When they were younger, they did their own thing. But when they had to send 5 kids to America and London, they had to work together as a team. So it just really depends on kind of like, I think, and we also, like I said, like no marriage is the same. Some people, you see them, they are talking like, oh, my husband shows me everything. There are people that lie.
Yes.
They lie. It's true. There's some, and don't let them put you in trouble because you don't start saying, no, I want to know everything. My friend knows everything. It's a lie. So just do what you and your husband are comfortable doing and work together. And it's not going to be overnight. It's day to day. It's really like small wins. Small.
I think it will be, you know, pretty hard, especially if he's the one that has always been taking care of you, because then it kind of feels like, okay, you really should help him out now, because he's never asked you for anything. You know, he's put a roof over your head, he's made sure that, you know, you're okay and you're comfortable.
But you married me, so that's expected. No extra brownie points for that, but girl, go ahead.
You know, so I kind of feel like, okay, if he's the only one making money in the marriage, then there is almost like a little bit of an expectation or almost obligation as well. Like, okay, where, you know, like if you don't do this thing, you don't know what's going to happen next. We might now,
go under
because if I don't earn anymore, we can't have this lifestyle that, you know, so... I don't know. So from that perspective, it's hard for me to answer because I've never been in a situation where I haven't earned, you know, where I haven't had my own and, you know, been able to say, okay, you know, like, you can't do this right now. Okay, fine. You know, I'll do it. But next time is your thing to do, actually, you know. So, yeah, so I think a little bit hard because if you say no and you're not working, you're not, you know, you haven't actually said, okay, this is why I'm not giving you, but I'm just not giving you. Then it will, you will
fight. Well, how do you say that I find an inheritance to be a sensitive thing? I don't think you should have asked for it in the first place. That is as blunt as it gets.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Worst case scenario. You can't really say that now. So you have to now find one lie that you have to tell.
It's convenient to say that, though. It's convenient to say it's a sensitive thing.
Thanks.
I just think that it's like, you can't, like, marriage is, you married, hopefully not to divorce. You married this person. This is the father of your kid. This is someone that you are, like, is your lifelong partner. Ride or die. So if you said that and he needs you, why not? Like,
I feel like you can need me if we got the school fees. If that money was to pay my children's school fees, or we were,
of course, you shouldn't ask for that.
We were homeless.
Yeah.
I feel this is an investment deal that if I know nothing about and I'm completely ignorant, you know what I mean? Let's just look at reality of life.
Okay, it's true.
If you peg off tomorrow, my money is gone.
Which is why you back yourself
time,
up.
That's what I'm saying. So by the time, but I'm saying that we are never that smart about backing.
So you won't want to give him, you just say no.
I think I would offer my personal money. Well, I would offer a sum of the cash.
Some, not everything.
Maybe
like 10%. I would say 10%. Or
25%. The property's down.
No, you can't add.
So yes, I would say give him some of the cash. But it sounds to me like he needs one of either.
No, I say rule of thumb, 25% max.
Yeah,
25%.
Exactly. So I think that's where
and
you can
that should take you somewhere.
Yeah, even I've tried.
That should take you somewhere. The rest, go and ask your uncle.
Ladies, for being so candid and sharing. Thanks for coming on the show. Well, that's all we have time for today. You've heard it. I don't trust any man who Well, you can join the conversation by using the hashtag ChickChatLive. If you have a topic or a conversation you would like us to discuss, follow us on all our social media handles on the screen below. I'll see you guys next week on ChickChatLive.